This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Welcome, everybody, to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 8th of April, 2021. For once, the Three Stooges are here in the studio together. We'll try to refrain from any fisticuffs. Pretty good session yesterday, Peter. The one of my favorite Twitter comments on the FOMC minutes last night was something akin to, this was like the FOMC minutes equivalent of that movie, This is Spinal Tap. Don't know if I'm showing my age too much. And that the Fed is cranking things up to 11 on the dovishness scale. It really was interesting because they have this word unanimity around these minutes that it was clear that everybody's lining up to the party line, which is the Fed is not going to touch any indication of withdrawal of accommodation or forecasting tapering or anything else until they see these outcomes that they're looking for. The sustained inflation and employment returning to pre-pandemic levels. And the market's a bit oddly to me celebrating it more after hours than actually during the session. We had, after all, a couple of hours to digest that news before the session closed last night. But what's your take, Peter? A very strong session, even with a relatively flat Asia overnight.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you said of it, because the Fed fund futures are actually pricing in slight change on the interest rate expectations for potential rate hike. So let's see what that battle between the Fed and the market, what that turns out to be.
But a lot of that has been unwound, to be fair, last three sessions, together That's with true. the general consolidation across the curve in treasuries. And we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. But in terms of equities, the rally basically continues. And you've put up on slide two here, John, a NASDAQ 100 futures chart. I think if we extend momentum today, we probably will have a new all-time high on the close tonight. It's very difficult with the dovish Fed. A lot of stimulus is coming from the Biden administration. You have still, I would say, an equity risk premium that is very close to the historical average. Interest rates are not moving much, so the discount rate is very low on cash flows. And you have Jamie Dimon, the CEO, basically the spokesperson for the entire U.S. banking industry, saying the other day in his shareholder letter, which was more than 60 pages, by the way, that he sees this U.S. economy booming way into 2023. And given the large balance sheet and all the commercial banking activities his bank is running, I think he has a pretty good pulse on what's really going on. So interesting times, and you see the same momentum in the DAX futures and elsewhere. And we had a good session in Asia. Yesterday, I just want to highlight it. So we are within this rally, which is pretty broad-based. We're seeing in these different pockets with very high valuations that we all have pointed out several times are aggressive. So green transformation, next-gen medicine stocks and bubble stocks, they really had a terrible session yesterday. And also our oil themes that are down year-to-date, also together with our battery basket. So this whole complex of richly valued equities are being repriced relative to other parts of the equity market. So I find that quite interesting. And I just want to highlight that we're working on some theme baskets. So we'll be soon be launching a Chinese consumer and technology basket. I'm really looking forward to present that one, because with the technology clampdown in China, you need to focus on consumer stocks. And then we have a crypto and blockchain that is coming up, together with, of course, the Coinbase IPO. We talked about that on yesterday's podcast. And then we'll have a new, some might say a boring one, but I think it's very strong companies in this basket, and that's exchanges and brokers.
All right. And you mentioned the broader market. And of course, the S&P broke to new highs, all above 4,000, and extending that pretty aggressively overnight. Chinese market was, if the last time I looked, it was very slightly up, but it's still in a very, very different place, technically, to say the least. We've talked about them keeping a tight clamp on policy. They're looking a bit nervously towards this incoming stimulus from the U.S. and wondering how much is going to, I guess, provide some risk of overheating on the production side in China. But you have an interesting story related to one of the big Chinese stocks, Tencent.
Yeah, so Tencent is this big social and mobile platform in China. They have the WeChat, they have payment systems, they have everything gaming. It's a huge company. It's the largest technology company in China. They had a large part of their company being owned by a South African investment company called Napster. They they divested their Tencent ownership into a new company called Prosus, which is listed in, on the Amsterdam Exchange, and it's part of the big indices here in Europe. And they are coming out this morning saying that they're selling a very large block. I think it's the it's being announced as being the second largest block trade ever in the history of equity trading. And I've just put in on slide four a little insert on Tencent. I mean, given the consensus forward estimates on sales growth and free cash flow generation, why would you ever sell a company like this? Because you cannot find anything like it. So the only takeaway, I think, which it could be a very naive and simple explanation, but my takeaway is that they see the wordings of Xi Jinping. I've put in a headline here. It's from late March, I think, 30th of March. I think China is serious on the clampdown and regulation of the technology sector. I think there is such an elevated uncertainty over the trajectory of earnings growth going forward here that you have to bake in larger discount rate. And I think just Prosus want to take the proceeds. They have had a phenomenal run-up in their Tencent shares and take that profits and invest it elsewhere.
I think that's an interesting signal from China. And I think a similar, if a different style approach could be the risk in the U.S. With these companies having too much power and reach. There was a Wall Street Journal article yesterday about a number of trade groups across the U.S. representing thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of businesses, looking at moving against a significant campaign to move legislators, lawmakers against Amazon and some of its practices. So it'd be very interesting to watch. Has there been anything interesting to watch, Ole, in your space? I know you're bringing up the metals again today, but we have gold sort of reflecting a lot of the other pairs against the dollar, sort of creeping and pushing on some resistance, and I guess silver as well. But, you know, it's not very impulsive stuff yet.
Not at all, John. As I put into the headline here on slide eight, silver tries to punch a hole through this resistance. We're trading above trend line to this morning. We're not really too keen followers of trend lines. They tend to be adjusted as the price changes. Nevertheless, it's trying to move higher. Gold as well, but it's also clear for us that for now we are stuck in for now what looks like a consolidation area. We got this support we found last week below the 1680 level, but really that 1765 remains the key line in the sand. And what's interesting as well is this recent weakness has led to the lowest open interest in gold futures for almost 2 years. Volatility is coming down. ETF has been seeing net selling for this almost since January. So if we are seeing the market springing a surprise to the upside, there is a lot of pent-up demand coming back into the market. So we'll keep a close eye on these upside levels. But I think really in order for that to happen, we need to have a reinforced focus on inflation. And clearly your area, John, the dollar, we need to see the dollar weakness resume. And these are really the two major drivers at this moment in time where yields have stabilized somewhat and if anything, drifting a little bit lower, which is also adding some underlying support.
Yeah, that is the multi-trillion dollar question, this situation with U.S. treasuries and longer yields. We've consolidated. Are we going to consolidate more? I kind of spoke a little bit in favor of that yesterday tactically, but I really don't know. I feel like we are going to find some resistance to that move in treasuries at some point. It could be, we could already be peaking out today, or it could be not for another week. But I think that will, of course, be the key question, not only for metals, but for the dollar. As we've talked about, this is the only leg really the dollar has to stand on is if treasury yields continue to go higher and helps to take U.S. real yields higher. And we've seen, as I highlighted yesterday in the trend analysis, but I've sort of broken it out into a scatter plot on slide five of today's slide deck, where you can just see the performance of the lowest yielders. So on the x-axis, you have the 10-year sovereign bond yield. You see the Swiss franc is far out to the left with a sovereign bond yield of minus 30 points as of the end of April. The euro, I took an average basically of France, Germany, Italy, just to create a synthetic 10-year basic yield. And you can see the leading performances from the Swiss franc, the euro, and the Swedish krona. A bit curious why the Japanese yen hasn't done better during this consolidation, but clearly this is the driver. And these were the currencies that were formerly quite weak against the dollar. And we've reached a key inflection point, especially in Eurodollar, on this little consolidation here where we're bumping up against the 200-day moving average. You can see on slide six, I put in a little chart there, and technically the 61.8% retracement. I suspect yesterday's little burst above 119 was a few stops going through on that 118.80 level falling. And that really is a key zone here around 119 plus. And that combined with the coinciding indicator, the treasury market, on whether we're going to get another round of higher U.S. yields and another bout of dollar strength here, or we can reverse all of this around. And then, Peter, you put in a very useful slide because it's a reminder that tonight, we have this on slide 7. The Chinese PPI, a really key global inflation indicator as an input to really the stuff in the world that is made. And it does coincide a lot with crude oil prices, but still other factors on top of that. And you've got some great perspective on that.
Well, I think actually all of that put in this slide. But we talked about it on our internal call. Ulla, you'll get your moment to shine in a few seconds. I'll just highlight that there has been some recent talks lately in China that a lot of their producers, it's the world's factory, we have to admit, that a lot of their producers are really being squeezed on their profit margins. There are rising input costs because of your space, Ulla, with rising commodity prices. But then also you have bottlenecks on the shipping side that really beginning to pressuring some of these Chinese producers. So the expectation with the base effect, but also the rising input costs, that that China will begin to be exporting inflation into the global economy. And the Chinese PPI for February rose to 1.7% on a year-on-year basis versus minus 3.7% year-over-year back in May 2020. And with the base effect, I expect a pretty big move here. So this one is a key one to watch, but also because of oil.
Especially oil, yes, Peter. And that's why I actually put it in, just because obviously I think right now CPI in the US, which we are all struggling to kind of understand, it's running at less 2% when we see some of these massive price rises over the last year. But this is just highlighting how the oil impact will be over the coming months as we start to take this massive rally we had from the lows last year into account. So this will basically stay with us all the way through to the end of the year.
All right, let's move along. I think it was you that put in the slide on slide 9, Peter, right? The global minimum tax. I'm not sure if we highlighted it yesterday, but this is a key issue coming up, where we have a U.S. Secretary of Treasury and a whole style from the Biden administration, which is an attempt to sort of reestablish U.S. Global leadership on a number of issues and working multilaterally. And one of those approaches, and it'll be so key for global asset prices and for folks that are trying to keep their wealth offshore, whether this kind of initiative by U.S. Secretary of Treasury Yellen succeeds and this effort to encourage. I believe that the context is an OECD discussion on minimum tax rates.
Yeah, exactly. So it's part of the, Made in America tax plan from the Biden administration. And they're looking to create this global minimum tax. So the sort of foundation of the globalization over the past 40, 45 years has been to have an increasing share of multinational companies, and they're using transfer pricing to book profit in lower tax jurisdictions. So we know here in Europe that Luxembourg and particular Ireland within the technology sector have been a big receiver of these booked profits. And I've put in some different inserts here. So again, slide 9, this guy, Gabriel Sokman, a lot of you guys have probably never heard about him, but he was the guy that dug up all the data that Piketty used in his famous big book on capital, where he showed, you know, capital growth have been largely significantly higher than labor income over a very, very long period. And you know, he wants to change that. Anyway, Gabriel Sokman has the best data set. I think he's a professor at Berkeley's today. It's the best data set on tax havens and cross-border transactions within this realm. He's definitely a guy to watch if you want the latest information on what's going on this global minimum tax. And it's important, especially for equities, because some estimates out there are pointing towards a 10% hit to S&P 500 earnings with the current tax rates that are being floated around. Could be phased in over multiple years. So we shouldn't be too negative on equities on this right now. I've also put in some numbers on Google, their financials. You can see I've highlighted with a red line there the effective tax rate and some of the tax rates that are being discussed for global minimum taxes, all the way from 21% to 28%, basically. And I think a lot of the technology companies and healthcare companies with intellectual property rights, which they then put into a shell company in those low jurisdictions, and then they do transfer pricing. Those companies could be hit with a lower income, net income growth because of this high effective tax rates. And I think those are coming out yesterday from the deputy treasurer in the US. He said that he was very confident that a vast majority of developed nation would agree to this minimum tax. And I think that, you know, echoes what we have seen from Europe. A lot of European countries are in on this. So I think this is potentially the biggest shift in tax policy and potential threat to the globalization we've seen in 40 years, in the past 50 years, sorry.
Yeah, the difficult thing for me is the yo-yoing of a US leadership, the risk there. So if you have a very, very, very different style of leadership and signals being sent from a Biden administration and an initiative like this relative to the Trump administration. And then if, you know, then the 2022 midterms, if you get the Democrats losing influence, and then the 24, if the presidency switches parties. So it'd be very interesting to see how that effort holds together, also just given the U.S. domestic political picture. We'll skip earnings for today, and we'll move straight to the calendar. Just want to bring up a couple things. I'm really not terribly excited about the ECB minutes. Yes, maybe they're going to move forward some purchases, blah, blah. I don't think it's anything that moves the euro. I think it's U.S. yields and those technical levels we mentioned earlier, especially in the euro dollar. Watching the initial claims closely, we'll be doing that every week. Last week, unfortunately, they bumped up higher again rather than continuing lower. And then we have Powell out speaking, although it's in a context of an IMF panel, so don't expect any drama there. Two things overnight. Of course, that Chinese PPI is very important as a, maybe not as a big market mover, but as for important for a longer-term perspective on inflation. And then Australians, those for trading the Australian dollar, this RBA financial review is a little bit getting a little bit of extra focus given the very prominent mention of housing after some record housing increases, or at least record and multi-decade records of housing increases in March. So watch for that after, especially the New Zealand moves against housing speculation when they're struggling with a similar problem there. For today, that's it. And we'll be back tomorrow, of course, with the Saxo Market Call. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.